Welcome to Forex Overland and the Adventure Travel Inspiration Podcast. My name is Andrew St. Pierre White. What I'm going to bring to you today is a discussion that Paul Marsh and I had while sitting in the Hartmann Valley in Namibia in 2016. Let me just describe the Hartmann Valley for you. It took us a total of 8 days to reach it. It's in the far northern part of Namibia. It is an exquisite broad plain, surrounded, capped, maybe a better word, by black hills. It's called the Hartmann Valley, and it stretches all the way to the Kanene River in the far north, and for about, I'd say, 250 miles along the coast. Now, it's actually not on the coast, because between the Hartmann Valley and the coast and the cold Atlantic Ocean is a range of dunes. And the further you travel south along the Hartmann Valley, the dunes gradually spread inland. So they actually approach as you're driving south. They approach from the west. Amazing place. Glorious, glorious place to go exploring. If you're ever in Namibia and you are looking for a place that is utterly remote, very few people ever visit there, even in the high season, which is, of course, winter. Remote, magnificent, and there's very little there, so you need to be very well equipped. Paul and I sat underneath a tree while we were there, and we decided to have a discussion about equipping one's vehicle for better security. When we talk about security, we're talking about security from animals, and security from people, and security from the dangers of driving in very remote areas, how to call for help. Chat that we had is pretty self-explanatory, so we'll get to that now. Welcome to another edition of the Overland Workshop with Andrew St. Pierre and Paul Marsh. Hey! Clapping, clapping in the hill. Can you hear them?
Well, the cows are appreciating it.
The cows, yes.
Yeah.
Hope they don't come and eat our bedroll.
Yeah, it looks about the only green thing around.
Right, we're going to talk to this morning. It's a very fine morning in the Morian Plus, or actually Hartmann Valley in Kokoland. About vehicle security, things you equip your vehicle with, take on a trip to keep yourself safe. So, we wanted to talk about fire extinguishers. Often at the roadblocks, you'll get a situation where, apart from the fact that you need to be able to put out a fire in a hurry if you have one, in Africa they often check vehicles for fire extinguishers.
So the two
and
things
you
there,
now,
yeah. So we now fit
the strikers. Yes,
the strikers. The Striker is an amazing bit of kit. It's probably so effective, but most of the roadblocks in Africa, the guys think these are flares. So that's our challenge. So we still put in the cheapest, nastiest little fire extinguisher we can. You need to make sure it's got an in-date sticker. And if it hasn't got one, make one up. But it has to have an in-date or write something on it, because that's what they check for. Doesn't matter how old it is, as long as the sticker is valid. So I put a couple of these. They're nice and small and compact. I normally have one right at the front where you can grab it. Passengers can all grab hold of it. And one at the rear when you're cooking.
When you're cooking. And make sure everybody that's in and around the vehicle knows where they are.
And how to use
them. Make them visible and how to use the Striker. Okay. And I had in my troop carrier a life hammer. Again,
yes,
in a place where anybody can find it.
Now, most people don't know what a life hammer is. It's actually used to break glass or cut your seatbelt. Now, if you're in a vehicle and it's upside down and you have to release yourself, you won't release the buckle, especially if you've got tension on it. So the only way is really to cut it. And it's a simple thing. You literally can grab it, again, within reach from any of the passengers. That's the key critical thing. And you can either smash a window or you can just cut the seatbelt.
Yeah, it's got a little hook. It's got a little hook blade. You just hook the seatbelt and do this, and it's designed specifically for
really good
for
work.
Rapid.
The small things like this, which you hope you never have to use, and they're not expensive, but you absolutely should put them in the cars.
We've had a lot of trouble with donkeys and cattle. We on this Land Cruiser, we have a standard hooter, which is fine for people, but it's not good enough for donkeys. It's not loud enough. Doesn't have a so. I haven't fitted them to my last three or four vehicles, but in my early vehicles I had.
So I fitted all different kinds. I fitted the air horns with separate pumps. I fitted the bellow type. And the problem is the dust kills most of them. So my advice is to get some really, really loud hooters
extra hooters, fit them on, and you're going to find, especially going around mountain passes, you know, it's a blind corner, and on dirt mountain passes, dirt roads, and that people will use the whole road to come around the mountain, especially if it's a truck. And I've had situations where I've come around the corner head on into a truck and avoided it by the skin of my teeth. So, you know, blasting the horn before you go around a sharp corner just lets people know, animals for sure. So yeah, good safety. It's a safety element. It doesn't cost a lot, and worth doing. Okay. And you can have it fitted to a separate button if you absolutely don't want it to make such a noise every time you press your hooter.
Alarms and immobilizers. I know you remove them completely from the safari drive vehicles.
Well, because there's a reason why. So what we do is on the vehicles is we basically, you need to know how to bypass your immobilizer. The worst thing you can have on a vehicle that goes into the bush, in my opinion, is to be stuck because an immobilizer breaks down or it's faulty and you cannot start your car. Now all the vehicles, most of the trucks that we're using for our safari business and some of my own trucks, they're a simple diesel motor. The Land Rover 300 TDI, you can start it with one wire from a battery and it'll run. You just need the solenoid on the pump. So the moment you've got sophisticated alarms and immobilizers, besides the fact that some of them lock the doors automatically, which is really, really a problem, they go off in the most amazing, beautiful sights and annoy the hell out of everyone else in the campsite. And for me, the security issue is if you've stopped, turned your car off, and you've watching game coming towards you, it might be elephant. And suddenly you find a situation where you've got to start your car in reverse. Now that fumbling around with the key fob and getting it in and trying to start it and all that can pose quite a problem. So yeah, I'm dead against them. I far rather that you fit mechanical devices and fit trackers to your vehicle. Absolutely, insurance companies love those. And some of the companies will actually make you fit two or three. It's very easy to bypass an immobilizer. The guys who steal cars do it like that. So is it a security device? It's a deterrent.
It's a deterrent against petty thefts, but not professional car thieves.
You know, even when you're traveling now, when I travel, I look to how else can I secure my car? A diesel cutoff switch is not a bad idea because it's a solenoid operated device. You can flick it off. The guy will steal your car, he'll drive until the fuel filter's run dry, and then he's got a problem. He's going to have to spend some time bleeding the system to get the engine to run again. That buys you some time. I've fitted devices that actually lock over the pedals. It's a box that locks over the pedals. I love those because you absolutely can't get into the pedals. You cannot drive the car. And of course, you've got the gear locks that you can lock your high-range, low-range lever into neutral, which is another... I like to do that. So mechanical devices when you're going on long overland trips, definitely. If your vehicle is a suburban vehicle and you're going away on short trips, well, you probably don't want to risk that. You probably do want to keep the immobilizers and everything in place because that is, again, an insurance requirement. But I'm talking more on the overland vehicles when people are driving and around and serious trips through Africa where that does pose a problem.
And my vehicle, my Range Rover, I had a cutoff solenoid switch on the fuel pump and it would run for about 200 meters before conking out, and at once I forgot to unlock it and it stopped in the middle of traffic. And there I was diving underneath the passenger seat underneath the carpet to try and find the switch. So you've got to remember to turn it on again. And in my latest vehicle, which was a diesel engine, I ran a cable from the diesel pump, but I disguised it as the original wiring.
Yeah, that's
so only somebody who would be very familiar with that vehicle, that motor, would look at the wiring and be able to. So it was certainly, I felt safe with it. And again, it was a secret switch in a place that... And I actually Googled and contacted lots of people that had done a similar thing, and I found out where they had put a switch. Yeah, and I put it somewhere else. I put it where nobody else had put it on purpose.
Yeah.
And that was quite good.
So a switch, like a switch where you've isolated the pump or a fuel pump, I mean, they're going to have to take time because they're going to have a lead that they can actually make it up. Now, there's no vehicle that cannot be stolen.
No.
The reality is it's more about taking the precautions and not relying on an immobilizer and an anti-theft device to say my vehicle is secure. So when I'm traveling, I would far rather leave someone with a vehicle. And I'd engage a local to look after the vehicle because these locals are little touts and they need to earn a little bit of money. And they've got a whole network. And I had a situation where I was looking after my truck 20 or 30 years ago in Zambia, And my God, they managed to break in my truck while I was standing next to it and steal something from me. And I was standing next to my truck. And I learned that lesson, that actually what you do is you engage the local guys. You're going to pay them a few dollars. If you want to stand and watch your truck, fine. But especially at border posts, the guys will come up to you and they'll offer to look after your truck, and one will help want to take you through the border. Do it. It's fantastic. It's cheap at the going rate, where you can actually just pay someone a dollar or two and they're going to look after your truck. You've basically contributed to that little network. They're happy, you're happy, and you have a bit of fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know your vehicle's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Towns and cities, I will more often than not park up in a business if I have to, even a main dealership, ask them if I can park up my vehicle, or leave it at the campsite and take a taxi around town. It just means I'm not worrying about my town, my vehicle.
Mm. Spare keys.
Ah, yeah. How many times have people locked themselves out or lost a key, come back to the vehicle, and where are the spare keys? So I do two things. I hide a key for the front door on the vehicle somewhere.
Outside.
And you must, outside. And you must be able to get it without any tools, pliers, nothing. Somewhere zip-tied, taped onto something, in a roof tent. You find a place somewhere where you know it's not going to be seen as a key, and you can get to that key. Inside the car, your second spare set of keys is hidden, or it's in the safe, and the safe key never on your keyring. So that if someone found your keys and got your vehicle, they cannot then go and empty your safe. Or you've got hiding places for money and stuff like that. So really what you're trying to do is have a second set of keys that's hidden somewhere where either you know or it's locked away in a safe. And I used to have my safe key hidden somewhere in the vehicle, and I'd hide two.
Right.
And then spread things around so right. that you know where they are, right. which is quite important.
Right. Okay. Many countries, particularly in Southern Africa, I know, require reflective tape, additional reflective tape. Most countries, it's silver on the front and red on the back.
Actually, white. Silver and white. So
the one
you
well,
want,
white. Yeah,
yeah, the white. White. It is
white.
A silver white, you're right.
Yeah, on the front and red on the back. And
it's also a special type of tape. Some of the reflective tape is the newer one. It's if you look at it carefully, it's really got a little pattern on it.
Yeah.
And that's the one that they want. Zimbabwe.
Are they being specific now?
Yeah, Zimbabwe is very specific about it. And actually, you'll see some vehicles with red tape right across the back of the vehicles. I haven't had problems with people with, as long as you've got some reflective tape on, so, you know, a good section. And sometimes I actually put it high up as well, if people aren't too perturbed, because it is a safety thing.
Oh, it is, yeah.
You know, look at our vehicle's dusty, and you won't see any of that reflective tape because the dust is packed
yes.
on it. But the other thing to do is, you know, when you're heading off in the mornings, is to just, you know, you clean your windscreen.
Yeah,
clean the lights and reflective tape.
Clean the lights and reflective tape. In terms of equipment we can fit to our vehicles, lighting, when wild camping, you don't want to be too obtrusive, so you don't want too much lighting. But at the same time, if you're in an area where there are a lot of people around and wild animals around, you might want to put on one of these self-actuating, they've got motion sensors. And you can, I attach them to the outside of my vehicle. I only use them in a security situation where I want to be warned if somebody's coming from behind. The light will turn on automatically when it senses movement. And that's actually quite a nice security product for lighting.
It's a really good idea. I mean, some people will fit LED strip lights on the outside, and you've got three settings that you can set them to. And that's quite nice too. It can be LED lighting is bright.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes find too bright.
It is
so. What we've done on the this particular vehicle we're using now, a lot of people will have the canopy sides that open up, and they'll put a light on the canopy side, which is fine. And the little wire dangling between the two ends up fatiguing because they're tiny little wires, and it also puts a very bright light outside.
I don't like that. I
put it in the vehicle.
You put it inside the vehicle because otherwise it blinds you. If you can see the light, it's going to blind you.
Yeah.
So you've put it, you've hidden it behind
just
a recess.
Just in the roof.
You
then,
can't actually see the light,
but
it illuminates well.
So it gives good illumination there, and it's actually not too bright when you're standing outside. So if you put all three lights, one at the back and one on each side, this is a canopy that opens two sides and the back door, you've then got really nice light that spills out. But if you were concerned and you wanted extra security, you could put them on the outside. And what we've done for some vehicle clients is we've actually put a switch in the tent that they can just press a switch and all the lights go on.
That's a nice idea.
Which is not a bad idea. I also keep a spot in the tent or a bright torch, you know.
Yeah, no, I always do.
Really bright
when I'm
torch.
Sleeping, I always have a reasonably bright torch with me.
Yeah, it's a good thing for animals and non-wanted guests.
Warning triangles are a good idea for punctures. You have a puncture or breakdown side of the road, even if you're having a picnic, or, well, you probably should have chosen a more safe place to stop if you're having a picnic, but warning triangles also are mandatory. Certainly in many countries they will ask you if you've got warning triangles.
You'll need
but
two.
They're actually,
You'll
you need two. You have to have two, and they're actually really good things to have, as are high visibility jackets, particularly at night. So if you've got a puncture, you've pulled over, use them. Yeah. Really, really use them, because
people don't see you, and sometimes they drive along with one light working and you know, you're not sure.
Make yourself visible.
But really, what do you... You've come across a situation when you've driven along a road and you see a great big branch in the road. This is very typical. The African people, or most folk, when they're in the bush and they don't have a warning triangle, there's a set thing. You'll break a big branch off, you'll put it in the road. So if you have a situation where you've broken down and it's particularly dangerous, I would put the warning triangle up. I'd even go further back and put a big branch.
Put a branch
as
well. Put a branch, then a triangle, then your vehicle.
If you're concerned that it's actually quite a dangerous sort of spot, because
corner or something.
Yeah, people then are going to actually know the branch. It's sort of an unwritten thing in Africa that if you come across a branch, unfortunately, people don't always remove them. But you know, it's not going to destroy the car.
An important part of leaving and traveling in remote areas are leaving information with loved ones of where you're going to be, your itinerary, and some way to contact help should the worst happen.
There's great
so let's
devices.
Just talk about
there's
some
two,
of those
two
options.
Things. You're thinking of what I'm thinking. So the Spot is a great little device, okay, and it's becoming more and more used by travelers. You can activate it where you can send a message to.
So basically, it's a GPS tracking satellite system. So it has a GPS built into it, and it sends a signal. Tell me if I'm wrong. It saves a signal, and you can tell it how often to send the signal to a satellite. That satellite, you can also program it. That satellite will then send the signal back down to a server, and the server will update your website so people can, in real time,
track you
and actually spot where exactly where you are. But they have an emergency evacuation.
There's two buttons. One is you can push a button that allows you to send a message, I'm okay, and then you've got the emergency, which will pinpoint exactly where you are. So that's quite nice, because in a real extreme emergency, you've got to do one of two things. You've either got to get a GPS and get the coordinates of where you are to give those to someone, and that could be mistaken or not heard over a phone, whereas the Spot gives you the exact coordinates.
It triggers
of where you are.
The coordinate. And part of its message is this is the coordinate.
Now, the next most important bit of kit saved my life in a very remote part of South America.
Right.
Satellite phone.
Sat phones.
I do not travel anywhere without a satellite phone. I owe my life to the fact that the satellite phone worked when I had a major accident in South America. So, you know, yes, it's expensive. You can hire them. You can buy them actually on eBay quite cheaply. So anyone who's going to do a trip, I would far rather they took and gave up some other bit of kit and took a satellite phone with some airtime on it. You never know when you're going to need it. I found the Iridium to be the most reliable. Inmarsat's good too, but the Iridium gives you very good signals. So I'm more of a fan of Iridium, but I've used both. I've pretty much used them all and always carry
sat
one.
Sat phone. So I'm sold. We have been out without contact now for how many days? Six now, I think we're six with
six.
No, and we've had a sat phone and we're making short calls every evening. We're okay, we're fine, but we know we have a problem, serious problem. We can reach help. To me, that's, and some of the sat phones actually have also an emergency button. You can press a button.
And you can text with some of them. I mean, it's very, very advanced. Yeah. The new ones are really very good.
Right.
But there's no excuse, because you know, you can pick up a sat phone in England. I think I've seen them for as little as £150. You know, that is not a lot of
that's
money if
lot.
It's going to save your life. So no excuses.
Yeah.
You need to take one.
Yeah. That completes our list. Anything else?
Well, I think, you know, it's a lot about attitude and how you prepare to travel and what you apportion risk to. So a lot of people will look at stuff that we've mentioned and go, oh, I don't need that. Why would I bother? Well, take it from us that, you know, we've used that kit in different experiences, on expeditions, in bad situations, in accident situations. So I would not be recommending it to people if I didn't absolutely believe it's essential.
Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you in association